Mainly a humanoid is something that has human form or characteristics, but it has to be some kind of entity or creature that is not completely human.
Ladies and gentlemen, we know!
There are people that think they're enlightened after the encounter. Their eyes have been opened. They've been illuminated, like John Keel used to say. Or there are people that say that they don't want to see that again. They never want to see it again. They're terrified. She couldn't move. Then she saw like an 8-foot-tall giant, a man in bright coveralls. Her first thought, for some reason, was a thief. Suddenly, she heard something inside her head. I told her, "You think I'm a thief? What did you do with my dog?" She asked furiously. She heard again in her head, "You disturb me as you do now. I could crush you, but I don't want to. Just leave me alone. I'm busy." There's more to this world than what we believe or what we see. I think that's what I conclude. There's more out there. We're not alone on this earth. And I'm not talking about, you know, our animal friends. I'm talking about somebody else is with us. They've been here longer than us. Maybe they think that we're the ones that are intruding here. Who knows?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com. With another edition of BOA Audio Season 8, coming at you after our unexpected and impromptu extended spring break. Never expected that I would be gone for so long. A lot of stuff came up in the last few weeks. I'll tell you more about that at the end of the show, because I have heard your cries and you want some fresh BOA audio, so let's get down to it, my friends. On this edition of the program, we welcome tireless researcher Albert Rosales for a discussion on his extensive chronicling of humanoid encounter reports. In short, basically what a humanoid is some kind of human-esque entity. And as you'll hear over the course of the next 2 hours in this exhaustive conversation, we'll discuss how that simple description, humanoid, takes on many various forms that can be found throughout Albert's work, including the infamous and iconic Greys, giants, Nordics, Bigfoot, aquatic creatures, robots, and so many other variations on the humanoid form. We'll cover all of those different types of humanoids that have been reported over the years and detailed in Albert's work. Additionally, we'll hear some very dark tales of nefarious encounters with humanoids where dire outcomes afflicted the witnesses who spotted these entities. Beyond all that, we will talk about trends in humanoid reports and speculate on the big picture meaning behind this strange phenomenon. Just when you thought you might have a handle on the UFO enigma and the passengers of those puzzling flying saucers, enter the humanoid encounter phenomenon, which really just tears the fabric apart on that basic idea. How are there so many different kinds of humanoids out there, and what does it all mean? That's what we're going to explore here on the program with Albert Rosales. Altogether, it is a comprehensive conversation which covers a vast array of aspects surrounding the truly mystifying humanoid encounter phenomenon with a researcher who has compiled a stunning 17,000 plus cases of this puzzling enigma, Albert Rosales. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Albert Rosales, please let me take a moment and provide you with a little background on him. Albert Rosales was born in Santa Clara, Cuba in 1958 and migrated to Spain with his family in 1966. Following that, they migrated to the United States in 1967. After briefly living in the Bronx, his family then moved to Miami, where he has been since 1967. After high school and college, Albert joined the Navy, where he served for 4 years, had 2 med cruises, and earned a top secret clearance. For the last 30 years, he has been working in law enforcement. His work on humanoid encounter cases has been ongoing for the last 10 years and has resulted in a compilation of over 17,000 case files. Albert's work can be found at ufoinfo.com/humanoid. Once again, that's ufoinfo.com/humanoid. And with all that said, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 24th, 2014, Albert Rosales, talking about humanoid encounters on BOA Audio Season 8. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 8. I am extremely excited about this conversation I am about to have with our guest. At times when I am down on the world of UFO research, I find out about somebody that is doing such tremendous work that it really renews my faith in the people who are trying to get to the bottom of this. And that is really the case with our guest here this week. Albert Rosales has done an absolutely breathtaking job cataloging and chronicling humanoid sightings that have been reported over the years since all the way back to, 4780 BC, all the way up to the present time. And in total, as of August 30th, 2013, he had 16,982 cases of humanoid reports and encounters. So, I mean, think about that, folks. Just pause for a moment on that. 16,982, and that was as of August, so I'm sure he's already crossed the 17,000 mark easily by now. And that's just amazing stuff. And not only that there are so many cases like that and encounters and reports, but that he's managed to put all this stuff together in such a tremendous website. You can find that at ufoinfo.com. And if you really want to dig into the humanoid aspect of his work, just put a slash and put humanoid there right after ufoinfo.com. Just an amazing amount of work. Really, my hat's off to you, sir. Like I said, you restored my faith in UFO research. There are good folks out there doing just tremendous work, and you are one of them, and I cannot wait to dig into this subject with you. So welcome to the program, Albert Rosales.
All right, thank you, Tim, and thanks for having me. I'm trying to do my little part on the on solving this cosmic puzzle, but I don't know if there's ever going to be an answer, but I'm trying my best.
Dude, you're doing awesome. I'm without words to express just how tremendous this catalog is. I cannot believe it. As I was saying to you before we started the show, originally going into this, I was like, oh, just pick out some of the best cases. And then as I'm looking at the website, I'm clicking through here, and he has it broken, you have it broken down, by year, beginning in 1935. Prior to that, it's sort of in larger chunks. But let me just give an example for folks. Let's just pick, I was born in 79, so I'll pick, I click on 1979. It loads up a PDF file here that is 195 pages. 195 pages of just reports of humanoid encounters and sightings, for 1979. That's stunning. You have an amazing amount of stuff on here. You are such an unsung figure. Why aren't more people talking about this stuff? It's amazing.
You know, I don't know. I've been doing this like, for years now, and I started it and, doing the specific, the humanoid encounters and the entity encounters, maybe 89, 90. And from there, I haven't stopped. I had a lot of, ups and downs, but I haven't, you know, I've been reluctant to do a lot of interviews, and I just do what I do, and I try to chronicle everything that I can find, every encounter, and I'm just hoping that it will help somebody in the future to, I don't know, But I feel like I have to do this.
There you go. Okay, well, we usually start out with the bio, the background, and I've already been gushing and raving here about you. So let's find out more about who Albert Rosales is. You know, what drew you to the UFO phenomenon, and specifically, because you say on the page there, you say, I always felt that the study of the humanoid itself was more important than any other study, such as trace cases or some of the other aspects of UFO research, the specialization. So, you know, tell us about what got you interested in UFOs, and then in turn, what made you really sort of focus in on the humanoids?
Well, ever since I was a kid, I grew up in Cuba. I immigrated to the United States in '67, but I had several encounters when I was a child, which back then I didn't know what to make of them. I didn't know what UFOs were or what I had seen. Later on in life, I began reading books about the subject. I was attracted to them immediately, and I went to the library, local library, school library, and I was made fun of and poked fun at by my peers and other students. As a matter of fact, they used to call me the Martian in high school, believe it or not. Well, but I the first books that I read were like Jack's Ballet, Passport to Magonia.
Mm-hmm.
That got me started with the humanoids. And then the humanoids, but Donald Hanlon, the editor of Flying Saucer Review. And after that, I started collecting cases. I was in the Navy, and while I was there, I started off with collecting all cases, but then I realized it was just too much. And I just concentrated on what I thought was more important, which was what's inside a UFO. Who's controlling the UFOs, the humanoids, or the entities, or whatever you want to call them. And I started collecting those cases. I used all kinds of sources later on when the advent of the Internet. My research just blew up. I had resources or sources from worldwide, you know, Ukraine, Greece, you name it, Brazil, Argentina, everywhere.
It's stunning. The sheer breadth of the stuff you've got on there. It's funny you say you started just collecting every case, and that got to be too much. But now you've got 17,000 humanoid cases. So clearly,
I started handwriting the stuff. I didn't have a computer or a laptop or anything like that. I would write notes, just like I imagine Charles Fort did back in the 1930s.
Yeah.
And I had a whole stack of notes of cases. And I finally got a computer and here we are. I got more than 17,000 cases now, you're right. Yeah,
I presume so. You were like right on the cusp, on that August update. Now I guess to bring people up to speed and to sort of kick off the discussion on the humanoids, I guess sort of define for me, you know, what qualifies for you and for this project as a humanoid?
Mainly a humanoid is something that has human form or characteristics, but it has to be some kind of entity or creature that does not completely human.
Okay.
Anomalous or something that is encountered in relation to a UFO or not. I mean, most of these cases are like what you call entities in type E, which are entities encounter or humanoids encounter without the presence of a UFO or craft. And they're not necessarily human form. There's a whole slew of type of creatures. You have your Hollywood gray, and you have, the Nordic so-called top, you know, the tall, blonde hair ones. Reptilians, but there's more than that. It's just a whole. If you go through my website, there's most of the cases. They're not exactly a humanoid reported. They're not exactly the same. It's incredible.
Right. Yeah. It's. I could you even venture to guess how many different types of entities, you know, are amongst that 17,000?
Well, I imagine that. Amongst the types of like human-like, or maybe the shorter ones, there are different categories, different like here, like humans here on Earth. We have, in Europe.
Yeah.
The Spanish, the French, the Germans. Maybe that's how they're separated also. I don't know, but I can't even venture to guess how many.
Hmm.
And there are many that I term more like paranormal type in nature. Because I do believe there's a paranormal, a paranormal relation here with UFOs. Not all cases, but some cases there's a paranormal connection, which I believe there is.
Now, what do you mean by paranormal in that?
Well, maybe paranormal when there's something, let's say, maybe when there's somebody that is playing with a Ouija board and something comes through,
mm-hmm.
the Ouija board and tells him to go outside, that he will see a UFO or a light or an entity. There are cases that people have been playing around with a Ouija board, and they've been told to go to a certain location, and they have had encounters. And then there are cases in which an entity is seen that is really hard to determine if this entity is a spirit or a ghost or some kind of a humanoid.
Hmm.
There are many cases, and sometimes there are poltergeist activity related to encounters with humanoids. Or even with Bigfoot type creatures. I tend to include a lot of the Bigfoot type encounters into my humanoid catalog.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. It seems like, so to hone in a little bit more on the definition part of it to get an understanding of this. So even if,
okay.
So if someone has an odd encounter with something that they don't think, for example, I was reading one, from the website about the strange small woman who was curled up, at the bus stop in, I think it was Hollywood, Florida.
Hollywood, Florida.
Right.
Okay.
There was no UFO in that story. So it's not necessarily that there doesn't have to be a UFO connection for them to quote unquote like make the catalog, if you will.
Right, right. As long as the entity is anomalous or unhuman, like let's say like the recent reports of, I don't know, you probably have heard of these, black eyed kids.
Hmm.
BKs.
Yeah, we've done shows on them.
Yeah, I haven't really included too many of those in my catalog, but there are some. I had a lot of people contact me reporting encounters like that, and they're kind of weird. They're kind of eerie.
Yeah, they're more than kind of weird. They're
the only thing I can tell them when they ask me, what do I do if I see them again, Albert? They come to my door, I go, don't let them in. Don't open the door. Just lock your door and don't just try to ignore them. Hopefully it'll go away.
So we've established sort of that the UFO is not the prerequisite to be a part of this whole thing. Now, what about instances from the 50s and 60s of the contactees? Do you include that sort of under the umbrella of the – presumably it would be, but I know also that it's a whole different side issue in genre, if you will.
I try to include everything I can. I want to document everything. Contactees, abductees. I mean, unless it's really an outright hoax, or I don't put it in there. Something that's maybe somebody that's trying to, I had people call me up or send me emails. I could tell right away this. But I try to include all the cases like from the 50s, the known contactees. I include them because I like to document everything that's out there.
Exactly. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I see here. Now, it's interesting, too, when you're dealing with this sort of thing, and I noticed you do, obviously, like you said, you're just putting it all out there.
Right.
There's a difficult sort of scenario, in a sense, because when you look way back, a lot of this stuff gets conflated with religious events.
Very much, yeah. A lot of the Marian apparitions, or the Virgin Mary apparitions, Holy Mother apparitions, are very similar to UFO events. There's reports out of Brazil and people encountering female type entities, very similar to a virgin type apparition, but not with the same result. You know what I mean? there wasn't a shrine built, or thousands of people came later and worshiped the site or anything like that, but it was just an encounter with a female that it resembled a sort of a Virgin Mary type entity.
Strange. This is like from more recent times?
I had some cases in the 80s.
Yeah.
In Brazil. And many of these, in Cuba also, there was cases of somebody encountering something that he interpreted it as a Virgin Mary type apparition. So it was a female entity wearing a blue cloth, some type of a belt, gold belt. But there wasn't no message imparted or anything like that. Nothing was communicated. So
yeah.
he interpreted it as such. So I include all such type of encounters in my catalog.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just interesting too, kind of like as what I was saying a little bit previous, that as you look at the early cases, I guess the better way to put it would be the Bible's full of humanoid encounters. I mean, it's chock full of humanoid encounters when you really get down to it, to the basics of humans interacting with some kind of off, you know, non-human entities.
Definitely, like the angels reported in the Bible. It's funny, but none of the angels that the Bible spoke or wrote about are described as having wings. None. I mean, they were just reported as angels, but no, they were never reported as winged. Then in the Middle Ages, the artists, you know, they portrayed angels as being winged or having wings.
Hmm.
Now, but in the Bible, some of the angel visitations, like when Sodom and Gomorrah, the angels that visited Gomorrah were described as like shiny creatures, kind of glowing, but men-like, and they were not described as having wings. And nowadays, we do have a lot of, you know, creatures or men-like creatures with wings, so a lot of flying humanoids has been lately one of the most common encounters. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's interesting. Yeah, flying humanoids is a whole nother... There's a whole other thing. It's remarkable that the humanoid concept can encompass so much different stuff. I mean, we're talking about Bigfoots, aliens, the contactee experiences, just straight up abductions. It's like,
yeah,
we're dealing with a whole menagerie of stuff here under one umbrella. So I can see why you've got so much material.
I don't include all the Bigfoot or, you know,
right,
encounters. I include the ones that I think are more, you know, high strength. Like Bigfoot communicating with a witness. Mental telepathy has been reported many times. Or some of the encounters in Pennsylvania back in 73, which a UFO was seen and almost in relation to UFO landings or sightings. Those are the Bigfoot sightings I include.
Yeah, the big wave there. I think it was Stan Gordon wrote the book.
Stan Gordon, he did a hell of a job of covering that.
Yeah, yeah, that was a crazy time. Now, do you talk a little bit about this, because this is definitely in the notes here. Is one thing I want to ask you about. Talk about these sort of instances of communication that happen and what kind of, I'm sure it's just so varied that it's hard to really pin down anything, but you know what's sort of the nature of the communication in these encounters when they happen?
Very, but in the 80s, late 80s and 90s, 91 through all the 90s, there was a large UFO wave in Eastern Europe. That was the same time when the Iron Curtain fell apart. But and many encounters dealt with messages given to the witnesses. And a lot of these messages dealt with future Earth changes, global warming, increase of earthquakes, volcanoes, and most of them were over an environmental, you know, message.
Yeah.
That's mainly the theme there. Coming world Earth changes. Nature, the humans, how we are treating our planet, that we have to change our ways. I have cases like that in Puerto Rico, Panama, and a lot in Eastern Europe. like a warning. We've been warned many times.
Right. That goes back to the contactee stuff, too.
Yeah,
It's a recurring message of get your act right or something.
It is. It is. And many of them are saying, well, yeah, they give you a date, but, you know, it never happens. But some of these encounters in the 90s in Eastern Europe, they gave dates like 2014, 15, 16, you know, coming up. So we keep our fingers crossed here. We'll see what happens.
Oh, yikes. I see. I didn't know that. That's spooky. Now, as far as the Eastern European ones go, were these like, what were the entities that they were communicating with? Were these classic ETs or what?
Most of the, it's funny, a lot of the entities reported in Ukraine, Russia, Eastern Europe, were like tall humanoids. Many of them were men-like, tall.
Mm-hmm.
Very few instances that I have on my records, on my files that I know of, with my sources in Eastern Europe, have there been cases of little gray-type creatures. There has. I'm not saying there hasn't. But most of the cases reported in Eastern Europe, Russia back in the 90s, were human-like creatures, tall.
Weird.
Many Nordic type, but like the landings there in Barishness in 89, the creature were tall, and some of them were robot-like, but nothing like we get a lot here in the States, or, you know, the gray type humanoid.
So it seems like the grays are maybe a predominantly American phenomenon, perhaps?
Well, I could say that, but it's not really true. There's been reports of great type creatures in other countries also.
Mm, yeah.
But not as much as the U.S. I don't know why the predominance here of great type encounters.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that, or maybe they're Hollywood has to do with it, because we get bombarded with movies, you know, with great type humanoids. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
absolutely.
The recent movie, what was the name? Bob. And E.T. and Close Encounters and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've been inundated with that stuff, yeah.
Right.
Well, how much do you think, I guess now you say on the page that you know, you take these stories at face value. And I don't necessarily, you know, clearly of the 17,000, it would be interesting. I guess you would never know until you go off to the next level of life or whatever, the percentages are of hoaxes, mistaken cases or stuff like that. But I mean, I guess like, where do you think, this comes from? I mean, obviously we're speculating about off-world entities, ETs, but clearly there's gotta be something else at hand here, for this sheer variety.
Well, you know, I don't know about off-world, maybe, yeah, but I think there's more like an interdimensional level here that we're dealing with.
Uh-huh.
Other dimensions, other realms that at times there's an opening that something or somebody gets through, and there's an encounter or there's some kind of interaction. Or maybe they use wormholes or other dimensional pathways to travel, you know, but it seems like it's just too many. Some people, I had other researchers tell me that, well, if you go back to 4000 BC to 2014 or 13, 17,000 doesn't sound that much. Although maybe not, but I don't know. My own belief is that it's more like an maybe other dimensional entities that are, you know, interacting with us.
Right, exactly. It does.
With using UFOs, I'm not saying that there's not an extraterrestrial connection. I think there is. I think there's maybe a UFO or maybe alien bases and some of our other planets here in our solar system, maybe the moon, maybe Mars.
Yeah.
That's what I believe.
Exactly. I mean, we could be, you know, we're using the classification humanoid, but we could be, that could be akin to saying, like, dog, where, you know, the ETs are pit bulls and elves are poodles, you know, it's, there could be all different sorts of things going on here.
All different types of breeds.
Exactly.
You say you were born in 79. I have 335 cases for that year. I call the 70s the high strangeness decade, starting in like 1971. It's just like it was out of control. It was up to 1979. It was just incredible.
What do you think?
Model cases.
What do you think was the cause of that? Because there's also this sort of thing going on in the scene at that time too. That there was sort of an explosion of peripheral stuff. You know, interest in crop circles, cattle mutilations, abductions. That all sort of came to the fore. I mean, it had been around before that, but it came sort of into the consciousness of people looking at this stuff in that decade, too. So it seems like it was quite an awakening period for everybody.
Especially starting the fall of 73. Something went down, something happened, and it is sort of an awakening. You're right. A lot of like latter-day, if you will, latter-day contactees. Like back in the 50s, the contactees were like, celebrities, they were like, they will travel all over the world visiting other countries, but we have other contacts that are more like what John Keel used to call them silent contactees. We had a lot of those in the 70s and even the 80s. I see like in early 80s it was a slowdown. If you look at my catalog in early 80s, it kind of slows down and it shoots up incredibly in 89.
Yeah, I noticed that. There's some interesting, let me see if I can find that. Yeah, here, the totals by decades was pretty remarkable, cause there's some years that really stand out where, 1990, 595, the previous year, 500, and then the year before that, 261 for 88. So almost more than double 88's total in 1990. Now, what do you attribute that too, because perhaps better reporting, because you get these, let's circle back a little bit, because I want to know how you get all this stuff in the first place. Like 17,000 cases is this like you get a UFO book and you're looking through it and then you find there's a story and you haven't had it yet, so you put it in the catalog?
Well, that, books, magazines, newsletters, but what happened in 1989, the Iron Curtain came down and all the information started coming out of Eastern Europe, information like that we never heard like before.
Hmm.
The landing in Borisov, and then we have all the researchers in Russia that have been there all the time, Poland, Romania, they started coming out with all their cases. We never heard about these cases because they were, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, and a lot to do with the language, which a lot of these cases were never translated before, and there were hundreds of cases. I had a connection in the Ukraine that he will send me, he would translate the cases for me, and he will send me dozens of cases a week, but I will, in payment, I will send them like a package with 10 or 15 books from the U.S. He wanted books. They wanted books over there because they didn't have the books, but they had like cases. They were like inundated with cases, especially starting in 89 through the 90s.
Now, what was...
Slow down. Yeah, go ahead.
It sounds like you got an interesting connection there with these folks. Like, what was their... Were they as befuddled by all this as we are, or had they come to any sort of... not necessarily conclusions, but did they have any sort of, pet theories on what this was all about?
Well, over there is, like... There seems to be more open-minded to, and there seems to be more, scientific interest in Eastern Europe. A lot of these people had a connection to universities and different institutions over there, but as far as conclusions, a lot of the, researchers I was, you know, in contact with, a lot of them thought they were, and extraterrestrial, a lot, most of them are extraterrestrial, and some of them not, some of them thought they were more like I was mentioning earlier, other dimension, interdimensional or whatever, even subterranean species. But most of the thinking there is extraterrestrial.
Okay.
Unlike of many other researchers in other parts of Europe.
Okay, so yeah, so it almost kind of mirrors the American perspective on this as well.
Yes, true. What is your birth date in 79? See if I have a case for your date.
It's January 26th, 1979.
That was a very busy month, 79.
Oh, boy.
January 26th it was. Let me see if I have anything there. Yeah. Very busy month. Got 24th, 24, 25. I got 25. Then he jumps to 28. Sorry.
Oh. It's all right.
There.
Well, it's just amazing. Like I said, the sheer amount of stuff on there. Again, it's really hard to ask you about, to sort of put a bead on these things, because this is like a list of outliers amongst outliers. It's even more bizarre. But do these encounters generally run along the lines of sort of serendipitous? They seem accidental, I guess is the point I'm trying to make. They seem like more often than not, these people are stumbling upon some kind of humanoid, rather than, I don't know, the humanoid came to them with the express purpose of seeing them, communicating with them, abducting them, etc.
Well, I think you're right. A lot of them were like inadvertent encounters. People go out camping, or maybe they're out somewhere in the country, or at night they go out for some reason and there's an encounter. But there's also a lot of people that what I call repeat abductees or repeat experiencers. They have repeated encounters, and these people seem to be somehow chosen or picked to have several encounters. I investigated several local cases, several, and I talked to a lot of people involved cases, and somehow there's people that have encounters all through their lives. And since they're children throughout their adult lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, when you said that you had a UFO encounter, that was crazy enough. But if you told anybody that you had several encounters, that they would brand you as a nut right away.
Hmm.
It didn't happen. Now is a very common thing that somebody says, I've been involved in a UFO encounter, and they already had several already.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. There's a sort of a mixed bag on this. In some corners, it's okay if you come out with these sort of instances, but also I'm sure there's got to be a widespread, at least here in America, sort of a societal taboo against this. You know what I mean? If someone is having encounters with a humanoid, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, you have 17,000 cases here. The actual number of such events may be triple that, just from the people who wouldn't ever tell you that it happened to them.
I have many instances of people contact me at first, and they say, I need to tell you something that happened to me. I go, sure, it will be confidential. If you want to, I'll add it to my database, and you will be anonymous. And they say yes, but they never contact me again. I guess they're afraid.
Yeah.
Or they don't, you know. And, you know, it's like back in the Middle Ages, people that, all those people that were burned out of state because they were accused of being witches. Because they claimed they encountered the devil or encountered goblins or whatever. God knows. And, you know, thank God we're not living back in the Middle Ages, because that could happen to the UFO witness.
Yeah, I hasten to say, but I bet you in some countries, I don't want to say which countries, because I'll probably get nasty emails, but I'm sure in some countries, if you had a humanoid encounter even today, you'd be branded a heretic or a lunatic.
Or so, a UFO encounter, yeah, any kind of anomalous encounter. You're right, yeah.
So,
I mean, in South America, they're very much more open.
Right.
To that. Even in Europe, Eastern Europe, and Asia, Middle East, not so much. But especially in the Middle East, there, I don't know, but even though I got cases, a lot of cases from there, India, it feels like it should be a lot more cases from there, but I don't have that many.
Yeah.
China, the same thing. I don't know.
Well, perhaps we're dealing, you were talking about the fall of the Iron Curtain. Hopefully, someday, maybe, I feel like there's a wealth of UFO information at hand in China that we don't know about, that hopefully, maybe, someday will come out that we'll be able to all share in. But I don't know. Maybe
I think so,
incorrect. Yeah.
No, you're right.
It seems to be the case, because clearly there's sort of a ring of secrecy around that land, and they'd be foolish not to be interested in UFOs. So they're doing something over there, looking at it, I'm sure. It'd be interesting to see what they know. Can you imagine just the sheer size of China? What kind of stuff is there?
Yeah, right, the amount of people there also. I have tried to contact people there, and hasn't been easy.
Hmm.
I even contacted people in New Zealand and Japan, all over the world, and Poland, Hungary, Brazil, Argentina. One place I don't have any one case is Albania. I haven't been there. I mean, I only got one case for that. It's a little country, so I guess I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Well, if there's any Albanians listening and you've had a humanoid encounter.
Yeah, give me a, send me a message to my email.
Yeah, get in touch with Albert so we can find out more about this. I wanted to ask you about this because this was really weird. That video, it's from 2007. People can see it on the website. It's from Poland. I'm flummoxed when I look at that video, and I'm stunned that here it is, it's 2014, it's 7 years probably since the video was taken, or six and a half probably, and I'm stunned, I've never even seen this video. It's tremendous, it's just absolutely baffling. You know, tell people about this video and what you make of it.
It was sent to me by a Polish researcher, and at first he didn't want to be known to anybody. It was kind of a hush-hush thing. But then it started coming out in different places, mostly in Europe. Like you see in the videos, it seems like they're laying on the ground there covered with a blanket, and something comes out of behind some trees or the woods, like a little man or a little creature, and is holding some kind of staff or something. Now, with some of the Polish researchers that I talked to, they're divided. For some reason, there's a couple that think this is a hoax. They didn't tell me why they think that. But a lot of them, the ones that presented the video to me, they vouch for the video. They believe is a genuine video. It seems to show some kind of a small humanoid. I don't know if it's some kind of like a sprite or a fairy or a leprechaun. I don't know, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very weird. At first, I had to watch it a few times, but at first it looks like someone raking. I thought it was someone raking. I didn't realize there was somebody on the ground there with the blanket. So
there's somebody on the ground with a blanket. I don't know if they even saw anything. I'm not sure. I don't think they saw anything. That there's a dog that seems to be looking around. His ears perk up, but I don't think anybody saw anything.
Right, that seems to be the case, because they're acting pretty naturally as it goes on. You know, it's just an inadvertent pickup in the video. You almost wonder if it's like some kind of, like you said about the dimensional shift, you wonder if it's just not like a, I guess like a supernatural glitch in the camera, if you will, where it somehow for one brief moment just picked up a tiny little moment of another dimension or something. Who knows? It's really weird.
Well, I talked to a lot of people that they believe that maybe there's time travelers involved. I mean, that's further out there. That's kind of hard to believe, but who knows, you know.
Yeah, time travelers. Yeah. If anything, the time travelers would be the least likely to pop up on the humanoid collective, because they'd be the most human of all the entities. So, you know what I mean? It's like unless they evolved or changed so much that we wouldn't recognize them as humans.
Well, do you remember the 1966? this case is in the humanoid, in the book, The Humanoids, the Eddie Laxon encounter in 1966. When this guy is a, he said like a mechanic, and he sees an object on the ground that, that looks like a metallic fish. And then out of some guy walks out of the object that looks like he, according to this guy, he looked like a normal Air Force guy. Dressed up like in some kind of uniform, and he was like kind of checking around the object. I don't know if you ever heard of that report.
No, I never heard this story.
Never? If you look at 1966 in my catalog,
mm-hmm.
Let me see if I find it for you. Some people think that it might be...
time traveler?
Not a time I don't know. Maybe some kind of a Earth technology. That has been being kept hidden. A lot of people claim that a lot of the UFOs are...
Like black budget projects.
Yeah, black budget. I can't find it right now, but if I do, I'll let you know right away.
Okay, yeah. So, all right. So we're also talking about instances here where there's, you know, I guess humans involved with UFOs, they would fall under the humanoid category in a sense, too, so...
Well, there's many cases in which people encounter UFOs and their occupants, and the occupants are like a mixed breed. Humans, short greys, and other types of creatures.
Hmm.
Many cases like that. I find those cases very high strange and very interesting cases.
Now, beyond the environmental warnings of these communications, are there ever instances where the entity like knows the person? You know, where it's like, hey, Albert, you don't know me, but I know you. I'm E.T., that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people that say that, hey, do you remember me? Do you know who I am? I had a guy in Spain that said the entity is something very tall wearing a black cloth, like a hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, told him, you know who I am. You don't remember me, but you know who I am. And this guy had no idea who was seeing. He was like totally freaked. And this entity led him to an object. And he doesn't remember much, but whatever it was had told him that he knows who he was, but he just didn't remember him.
That's strange. That speaks to the whole idea of like, people being abducted as kids and then they come back later. You wonder if that's what the entity was talking about. Like maybe the guy was abducted when he was a kid and he just doesn't remember it.
That's what I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. There's other cases, too. In March 23, 1966, if you look at at the 1966 catalog,
mm-hmm.
March 23, this guy is, driving to work before dawn, and he came upon a brightly lit metallic object blocking the highway ahead of him. It was a fish-shaped hull, 10 to 12 foot high, 75 feet long, maybe resting on stilts. A central door was open with steps and very bright lights. There was a curved antenna on the top. There was a tail on the back with a porthole. And he saw an inscription on the hull that was totally like human type inscription, like T, like in Tom, L, and then some numbers. It's there in the report. And he said he saw a man kneeling next to the object. And he looked like he was wearing a sort of an Air Force uniform with a peaked cap and a chevron insignia resembling that of a master sergeant. Now he got out of the car, he ran toward the object, then turned to get his camera, of course. But meanwhile, the guy went back inside the object and took off vertically, emitting a sound like an electric drill, and took off very fast. And, he wasn't able to, photograph it, but this case was investigated apparently by, Dr. James McDonald.
Oh wow.
The late, yeah. And this is weird because it shows that this whatever that was, the occupant was completely human type.
I'm telling you, man, the thing is amazing. I think you could spend like a 40-hour week just trying to get through the whole website and still would be have only made a scratch into it. So, I mean, like I said, kudos to you. It's interesting. Have you ever I'm sure you're kind of aware of the of what happened in ufology, where it was like they didn't want to deal with humanoids for a long time. I think APRO was the ones who would deal with without humanoids, but NICAP was like, no, no, we don't do humanoids.
APRO was the only one that originally took humanoid reports seriously at the beginning.
Right.
Not even the one, and they only started that like in the late 50s. At the beginning, any humanoid report or most of them that Blue Book got a hold of, they discarded. So God knows how many cases were like lost forever. And a lot of the cases that were called into NICAP, they were originally they completely disregarded those also. Yeah,
that's amazing. Why do you think, you know, on a human level, why do you think that happened?
I think it was too strange for them.
Yeah,
I think they were not ready for it. They were totally. I mean, they had enough with UFOs. Now they had something inside. I mean, out of the UFO, they couldn't deal with it. That's what I think.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Now, obviously, this isn't a critique of you and the stuff, so bear with me on this. But why do you think we don't have any like physical evidence of this, of any of these encounters, whether it be, you know, photographs or films, aside from that 2007 one? I mean, maybe there are photographs, and I just didn't get to them because the material is so dense on the website. But I mean, why do you think considering there's so many cases, why do you think we have a sort of a lack of anything particularly tangible beyond the testimony of the witnesses?
Well, there are photographs, but they're very hard to locate, and very many of them are people just either don't want to believe they're real. But there are photographs of supposed entities. I don't know if you heard of that video that was taken in Turkey in 2007 or 8, the security guard. I haven't even included that because I'm not too, I'm on the fence on that one, but I think we have more evidence that we tend to really say that we do. If you believe a lot of researchers, and I'm one of them, I think maybe that some branch in the government has more evidence that they are willing to share, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe a lot of the evidence that's been collected, a lot of them has been taken away by certain parties. A lot of people said that they had a photograph or some kind of piece of evidence, and either something happened that evidence was lost or stolen, something happened to it. But right now, I think there's a lot of legitimate photographs out there already.
Hmm.
Of, I'm not saying that they're spaceships, but they're unidentified flying objects, even videos. Maybe you're right. Maybe that we should have more evidence, but for some reason, maybe the UFOs did not allow us to have the evidence. I don't know.
Well, like in the instances of these humanoid encounters too, like we were talking about, they seem often accidental. So if I was like walking through the park and I ran across, a gnome, and then he ran away. There's really no way for me to document it other than what I saw on set. You know,
right, it would only be your what you say, what you say you saw.
Right.
So, you know, what kind of evidence is that? That's, you know, hearsay or, but a lot of people claim that they've been on board, like even Betty and Barney Hill, that when they claimed that they wanted to take a book on board, they saw the UFO with them, and they told them that they couldn't have it.
Hmm.
The guy in Brazil, Bias Boas, the guy that was made to, he was made to have sexual relations with the female alien. He tried to steal something that he found that he said he looked like a clock or a small clock, but they took it away from him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just hard to have some kind of substantial evidence.
Well, how about this? I mean, this is a purely American phenomenon in a way.
Okay.
What about, do we have any instances of people shooting these things?
Many, many instances. And you're right, most of them are here in the United States.
Right.
But there are some other places with bad consequences to the person that shot the, in Brazil especially, we have cases where this guy shot at in a place called Pilar de Goes, 1967. And it was a UFO that landed in a runway. It's an old runway in the middle of the jungle. And this guy came out of his shack with armed with a rifle. He shot. There were some figures running around the object. He said they were tall, bald-headed men. He took a shot at him, and something shot out of the UFO, like a beam of light. I think he said it was green or something. It struck him, knocked him down, and he fell kind of. And then this guy was dead within a week.
Oh my God!
Some kind of cancer that just started at a high rate, and it couldn't be controlled. And there was another case in Cuba. A military guard. He saw an object that he looked like a helicopter, but it was not a helicopter. It was oval shaped, and it had a beam of light, and he fired at it. Boom! He was struck in the head by some kind of light. Five days later, he woke up in the hospital. He didn't die, but he was out cold for 5 days.
Yeah.
There's many cases. And the U.S., there's a lot of cases of people shooting at them without asking any questions first.
That's why I say, it's an American phenomenon. Yeah, just got to unleash George Zimmerman.
I wouldn't do that. Right. But I wouldn't do that. If I see something like that up close, I don't know if I would try to approach it. I would be very careful. I wouldn't run to it, that's for sure. I have my own experiences. I have a little article on that. I didn't include everything there, but I have my own experiences. But I just warn people not to take an aggressive stance. Don't shoot at something that you don't know what it is, just because you don't know what it is. Use caution.
Right, exactly. That's words to live by for sure. Well, it stands to reason that there's something about these entities that even if you shot them, it doesn't seem to make a difference because, we don't have any dead as far as we know. I mean, there could be a story like you're saying about them taking away evidence. I mean, somebody somewhere could have shot an alien and the government could have just come and taken the alien and probably taken them. You know what I mean? And that's the last you heard of, your cousin Marty or something. So who knows what has happened. But as far as we know, there's no instances of somebody like shooting an entity and having it.
No, maybe people have claimed that, but it's been, outright hoaxes.
Right.
I know there's a case that was investigated by Leonard Stringfield,
mm-hmm.
the late Leonard Stringfield out of Fort Dix, New Jersey. I don't know if you heard of this case. In January 78, there was a couple of MPs patrolling the perimeter, and there was a little alien or a little figure that ran across, and they yelled at it to halt. They shot at it, and apparently they hit it, and it fell. And then there was something, an object showed up and picked up the bean or the humanoid or whatever and took off. This happened in 78. It's in the summary there. In Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Weird.
Right. And, according to Stringfield, the men told him that they thought that whatever it was, they thought it was dead. So.
Right. But who knows what they, what they could do when they picked it up, the craft or whatever.
I'm sorry, it wasn't Fort Dix, it was McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey, and then January 18, 1978. And it's there in the January summaries, if you want to read it.
Mm.
Pretty long summary.
Nice. So how many reports would you say you get nowadays just from, you've been doing the website since 96, I think you said, so how long, you must get reports all the time now from people.
Excuse me. I'm getting a lot of them from people that contact me, email. I know better not to get my phone out anymore. I had some really, I don't know if they were doing it on purpose, but there were some really crazy people calling me. But the latest email, I got a lady in Arkansas. She sounded very concerned, serious. I contacted her a couple times. And she and her daughter, but it didn't happen this last year. It happened in 2011 in Arkansas. I got the name of the town. I forget, but I haven't included it yet. But
uh-huh.
They were training from, they had gone rock hunting in an old Indian mound, they call it. And when they arrived, her daughter looked up and said, "Look, Mom, it looks like a witch." A witch. And she looked up and she said it was like a shiny figure that seemed to be like descending over them. It seemed to be winged, but it was shiny and it appears to be like, it wasn't solid, she said. It appears to be like a jelly. It seemed to be moving and it descended over them and they ran into the house and whatever it was. I'm still trying to get more information on that, but it was very interesting. She thought it had to do something with
the mound?
Yeah, but she said she found some kind of artifact there and then she brought them home.
Oh, Jesus, don't do that.
I told her that whatever it was, she should bring it. Take it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Because maybe she disturbed something. You know what I mean?
That's what I...
You know, maybe that's a paranormal type of entity. I don't know.
Now, when you hear from people who've encountered the entities, what's their mood? Because I think it's important to look at the witnesses, too, in a sense. Like, what is the effect on their lives? Are they frightened? Are they angry? Do they feel more enlightened? Has their mind opened? You know, what, do you get any sort of sense about how these experiences affect the witnesses?
A lot of people feel like their life has changed. They're not going to look at a life the way they used to before ever again. Everything has changed. Now they know that we're not alone, per se, that there's something out there that's unexplainable. They feel change. Now there are other people that have more negative encounters, which, you know, I've talked to a family from Australia has some very negative encounters, and they feel like they're being pursued or attacked by some type of beings. You know, thankfully there's less negative encounters than positive encounters, but, you know, it runs the gamut. There are people that think they're enlightened after the encounter. Their eyes have been opened. They've been illuminated, like John Keel used to say.
Mm-hmm.
Other people say that they don't want to see that again. They never want to see it again. They're terrified.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. Yes, frightening. Now, what for the family in Australia? What was the experience? What was tormenting them?
It's a place called Bulls Brook. I think it's Queensland. I'm not too sure. I don't have it right in front of me right now. But they're especially the daughter, a teenager, and a friend. They were getting visits at night. Some kind of entity, seemed to be a cloaked entity that will float into their room, and then they will scream, they'll hide under the blankets, and then they will wake up in the morning with scratches on their bodies.
Oh God!
They were like, you know, it was pretty weird. I try to tell them, why did you contact me? I'm here in, isn't there somebody in Australia that can help you?
Yeah,
I know there are investigators there, and I try to give them a couple of names and emails. But they kept contacting me, and I kept trying to give them, you know, advice on what to do. I think the last contact I had with them was in last year. But they kept getting, like, repeated encounters with this kind of weird entity that will visit their daughter and her daughter's friend at their house.
It
was pretty negative.
Yeah.
They said it was a cloaked thing that would float into the room. They felt some kind of negative aura coming from it.
Hmm.
Even perhaps evil, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to say that, but, you know, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. For some people, these are angels, and for some, they're demons.
Yes. Like I said, a different, either depends on the type of encounter you have.
When the Sox and Celtics and Patriots or Bruins are champions again, to the chagrin of New York and Chicago fans, the crowds will gather and watch a parade go down Boylston Street. And this time next year, on the third Monday in April, the world will return to this great American city to run harder than ever and to cheer even louder for the 118th Boston Marathon. Bet on it.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
This is our fucking city. And nobody gonna dictate our freedom. Stay strong. Thank you.
Let's sort of just tackle, I guess, the modern era. So we'll leave behind we'll jump sort of maybe from like 1900 on. Have you seen any sort of like trends or overarching themes develop amongst all these cases?
Well, that they're increasing. I think a lot of people think that no, that we don't have encounters anymore. I tend to differ. It seems to be an increase of encounters from the 1900s on up. I mean, and maybe more profound cases and more high strangeness cases now. Now and then, 2013, I have, let me see how many cases I have already. Because I haven't updated the website for 2013. I included, 2010 to 2013 together,
I'm sure it's by the nature, while you're looking at that, I'll just sort of make the point that just by the nature of time and everything, it's probably harder to get the more recent ones anyway, in a sense.
It seems to be like a more complex encounters now. It's not just your typical flying saucer landing and a little man coming out. It's more complex now. It's not just your friendly little green man. It's, you got a lot of what I call bedroom and intruders, and, all kinds of encounters.
Bedroom intruders, yeah, like the Australian case.
Yeah, that's very common. That's very common, very creepy.
Jesus.
You have let me see. I tell you, I got a. I haven't added any, but I have like 78 cases for 2013.
78 cases, wow.
And, 78 cases, yeah.
And like I said, but just by the nature of time, that number could increase to 150 or something in 5 years, because people will, somebody might call you in 2016 and say, oh, this thing happened to me in 2013, and then that'll go into the list, so it's...
Yeah, exactly, like that lady that contacted me from Arkansas, that she had the encounter in 2011.
Right, right, so...
And it seems to be like a lot of encounters, in South America. They're like, it never stops there, especially Chile, Argentina. For some reason, it's like, wow, it never stops. We had some winged entities in Chile recently. There was a photograph taken, talking about photographs. I don't know if this is not in the UFO info yet, but there's a photograph taken of an entity in Chile. And, November 7th, 2013, there's a weird, it's a real weird image. I want to send you my email with that, with my new cases so you could look at it. And plus there's another photograph of another entity taken in Argentina on November 19th, 2013. And in both instances, they were not seen. After the film was developed, that's when they noticed the weird entities.
Well, that was the case with the Polish video too, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And many cases is like that. I'll send you my newest ones from 2013.
Yeah.
On your email, so you can look at them.
Yeah, it's remarkable stuff. I mean, it's a difficult topic to grasp in a sense, because like I said, I think we're dealing with a multitude of different things all happening at once.
Right. Many different type of phenomena included here.
Right.
A lot of different types. And many people will ask me, what is your favorite encounter, your strangest encounter? I can't really answer that because there's so many.
Yeah.
So, wow, you know, it's impossible.
Do you ever feel like jaded by these? Cause you've gotten so many, looked at so many cases and everything. Are you ever just like, oh geez, you know.
I want to give up, yeah. I'm a couple times I almost did. But then I keep coming back at it, doing that. I don't know why. I keep coming back. And I think it feels like it's something that I have to do. I don't know why. But one day I'll stop. I don't know. Maybe soon. I'm not sure.
No, you can't stop. I gotta tell you, this is like, you're doing some of the best work I've seen in a long, long time. So you can't stop. I gotta give all props and due respect to Greg Bishop. He's been raving about your stuff for a while and really turned me on to the website a few months ago, and I was completely blown away, and I'm still stunned by the sheer amount of stuff. So,
well, Greg, I talked to him again February something. We have a date set up with him again. Yeah,
I think he said on the 9th, so around that time. But See, tell me a little bit about these Type X cases where you say the situation is so uncanny that it doesn't fit into any of the previous classifications of encounter. Talk a little bit about these Type X events.
Well, that's not recent. The denomination that I used, Type X, is when, okay, it doesn't really fit in. Something that's so weird and so high strength that I go, wow, it's not, sometimes it doesn't necessarily deal with a humanoid. It's with something, an event so weird that, that you can't really, like this case in Russia. This couple friends or some friends were this abandoned stadium, they were just, you know, playing around like that. And one of them suddenly seemed to stumble and he fell, but then he fell through the wall. It seemed like the wall wasn't there. All of a sudden he found himself in what he described it like a room, and he saw some windows and he looked down. It was dark outside, but he was totally in a different location. He didn't know where he was. Then he walked a little bit in the room. There was some men. He described them as like wearing some kind of a uniform with mask, and they were walking towards him. And he, terrified, he ran, he stumbled again, all of a sudden he fell out of the wall again, and his friends have been looking for him for the last hour or so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is investigated by a couple of Russian researchers, what do you make of that? I don't know.
That's weird.
There are many cases like that. I just started doing the Type X. A lot of people ask me, it's really hard to pinpoint, but the ones that you just got to read them, and that way you can determine if it's an X or not.
Right. Well, there's a couple in there that are like, people get into the craft and they see a Bigfoot in the craft, or they see a Bigfoot interacting with the ETs in a natural sort of way, as if they're on the same page, sort of.
Yes. That's what that's why I say that, Bigfoot, in my opinion, okay, I don't think Bigfoot is an animal. I think Bigfoot, I'm convinced almost that Bigfoot is an intelligent being, perhaps even more intelligent than us, than humans.
And
he has psychic, it could be, and he has psychic, powers or potential. It can speak to us, communicate via, you know, telepathy and do other stuff. Become invisible, like, you know, there are reports like that of Bigfoot. All of a sudden, you see a Bigfoot and it starts running, and all of a sudden disappears.
Right
in front of you.
Yeah, it seems like the Bigfoot, it's not an accident that people haven't nailed it yet. It knows that we're trying to find it. So, it knows not to be found. It's a very,
there's always rumors of Bigfoot bones here and there, but no, I don't think there's any credible cases in which somebody had captured a Bigfoot, actually.
I mean, it goes back to like what we were saying about shooting these things. If somebody shot an alien or a Bigfoot, we'd know about it, but that would be the game changer. That would change the whole paradigm of what we're dealing with. So clearly we haven't reached that point yet.
No.
I tend to generally ask people this a lot, who do sort of, I guess, the fringe research or who are doing really good, compelling stuff. Have you ever encountered any pushback from, let's say, the powers that be or people that don't want you to look into the ET, the humanoid aspect of all this?
Well, I guess I could say it now. When I was in the Navy, that's when I started doing my compilation of cases, not necessarily the humanoid, but I was in up in Great Lakes boot camp, and I remember the old UFO magazine Saga UFO Review or Report Saga SAGA UFO Report Saga. I used to be subscribed to that, one of the first people that was, and then I was in the Navy, and then my family will send the magazine up to my boot camp. And one day they call me in the chief. And they call me into their office, and they brought up the magazine. I guess they open up the package and they go, "Why are you reading this?" I go, "Well, that's unsubscribed to. I guess interested in." And they looked at it and they looked at me and they saw no smile, and then they gave it back. They didn't take it away, but they were so for some reason they were kind of wondering why I was interested in that stuff. I guess they thought it wasn't
right.
And my current job, which I don't want to go into, one day I was sent an email by Angela Joyner.
Yeah.
She wanted to interview me, and I gave her a bio, and I told her where I worked, and I think somebody at work saw that, and I was calling the office and told them not to do it. So. Yeah, it's a little. Sometimes I do get a little pushback.
Right. But no visits from Men in Black or anything like that.
No, not yet. No. No. I have sent you the email.
Yes,
I see. Okay.
It's pretty weird. I mean, I don't know what to. It's. Have you come to any sort of conclusions about a lot of this stuff? I mean, you've looked at it much deeper than I have, obviously, the humanoid aspect of it. I mean, it feels like we're just unaware. I feel like that's the word that comes to my mind here when I talk about, I guess, the human race in a way. We're at a big event. We don't know we're in attendance to, if you will.
Most people are clueless. Yeah, they don't know. They have no idea. And it's true. The thing we're mostly worried about daily life, which is true, which is maybe it should be that way. And most people don't even bother to look up in the stars. But there's something around us. There's more to this world than what we believe or what we see. I think that's what I conclude. I think that there's. There's more out there. We're not alone on this earth.
Hmm.
And I'm not talking about, you know, our animal friends. I'm talking about somebody else is with us. They've been here for longer than us. Maybe they think that we're the ones that are intruding here. Who knows?
That's a creepy thought. Yeah. Well, you do sort of wonder in a sense where it's like we could be sharing the planet with some other entity or species or something like that, or some intelligence is probably the best way to put it. And they could have been here all along, and they might not be too happy that we've just taken over the place.
No, they might not like us too much. Who knows? But maybe some of them do care for us, which is the hope for many of the people that do have encounters.
Hmm.
Maybe they're here to serve mankind.
Well, that's a good jumping off point in a sense, because one of the aspects of these Type X cases in the article that you wrote for the website there is it was such a chilling term, the permanent abduction, which
right.
It sounds like what that guy in Cleveland did to those girls. You know, a permanent abduction is just that they're just taking you forever. That's a scary thought, especially when you think about, there's a guy doing great work, David Politas, who does work on these amazing missing person cases.
I have all these books so far, and just incredible. And that's another thing that people are totally unaware of what's going on.
Yeah, and you wonder if there's some kind of Venn diagram point there where these permanent abductions and the mysterious disappearances somehow connect or something. I don't know. It's scary.
Yeah. Permanent abductions, there's more than people want to really admit. A lot of them. Like the, you know, like the, Fredrich Balintich case in Australia, the pilot, and the two Puerto Rican pilots back in 1980. That's many cases, actually.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon, that's for sure. It's frightening in a way. It's kind of like, done a little bit on human mutilations, cases, and, but the permanent abduction thing is, like you say in the Type X article, unless there's someone there to see it, you don't necessarily know it was a permanent abduction.
True.
But then there's...
There's a case in, again, out of Brazil. It seems to be, like, crazy stuff happening that happens there. Two brothers, and they were abducted. One was brought back, and the other one was never heard from again. This happened in 78 in Brazil. I mean, and instances like that, when there's a couple of witnesses, and one disappears, and the other one. I mean, usually, if it happened here, maybe they'll arrest the guy, and accuse him of murdering his brother. I don't know if that's what happened over there, but no, he was believed. It was an actual case in January 1978 in Brazil.
Yeah. Now, why do you think it is that Latin America is such a hotbed for these types of stories?
You know, I really can't. There's a lot of you know, Latin America. There's a lot of ancient history there. There's a lot of ancient ruins there. The Mayas, the Inca, the Olmecs, and before them, other civilizations that were there. And there's a lot of folklore there. There's a lot of legend. And same with, in Europe, same, and, you know, in the UK and, all over Europe. And I mean, in the US also, because we got the American Indians and they have legends and they have their mythology. A lot of that deals with visitors from the stars, from other realms or from other planets. If you think about it, a lot of our ancient myth and mythology deals with this is from other places.
Yeah.
Gods or whatever.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Well, I think you mentioned Artie Six Killer Clark in a few places, in these reports.
Yeah.
She's done amazing work, uncovering these modern encounters. You know, I think one of the big things that I took home from, obviously your site and her work too is, these things are happening in modern times, and stunningly, it's really not as widely reported in the paranormal media as you would think. Why do you think that is? Do you think people are still subliminally afraid of the entities in a way, just like it was back in the day of the NICAP and APRO kind of?
I think so. I think it's really hard to accept something like that. I mean, it's like accepting that there's something here that's more intelligent than man, than human, more powerful than human, and could take us out anytime they wanted to. I don't know. Maybe they don't want to face the fact, but we're not at the top of the food chain. That's what I think.
Right, right.
I mean, I'm not saying they're going to eat us or anything like that, but there's something here more powerful and more intelligent than us.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And people probably don't want to... I guess when you look at it like a UFO is benign. It's not... It's up in the sky. It probably can't hurt you relatively, but once we got these things running around on the ground, then we're dealing with a whole other kettle of fish of potential danger and fear.
Yeah, I like to include all the cases, the benign cases, the bad cases, the negative cases. A lot of people don't want to deal with the negative cases. They totally ignore those. They just want to believe that there's brothers from outer space are coming here to save us. I like to believe that too, but you know, we gotta be we have to believe what we see and what we read and what we're told.
Right, we have to deal with the facts that we have or the information that we have.
Right, the information that we have. Yeah.
So it would be foolish to dismiss the frightening ones because we don't want to be frightened because we do that at our own peril perhaps.
Right. You have to be open to all the situations or all the type of encounters, and you have to look at the good and the bad. In order to have light, they got to be darkness also. So that's my opinion.
We talked about the, I guess you could say, the spiritual or psychological effect on these folks who've had these humanoid encounters. What about, and you talked about the people who shot at the UFOs and bad stuff happened to them, but I guess talk a little bit maybe, are there any instances where people encounter these entities and then later fall ill or show any sign of physical effects from the encounters?
Yeah, many times there are people that, many times they're warned not to get close by the entities, but they still do. And then later on, these people are become really sick. A lot of them are like, the hair starts falling out. A lot of them get cancer, either some type of cancer or, and there are other type of negative effects. You know, they become ill, they become weak, they're bedridden for weeks. There's cases like that there's a case in Spain. This guy left work one night in his motorcycle, and he was followed by some kind of egg-shaped craft, a UFO, and came close to him. Just followed him, didn't do anything else, just followed the guy. And 2 days later, he was bedridden. He never left the bed. He died within a month. And the doctors say that he died of consumption, or he just withered away. And there's a famous Brazilian case from the 46. This guy was hit by a beam, a green beam from the sky. And an hour later, his flesh started falling off his body.
Oh, Jesus.
This happened in 1946. It should be in the, his flesh started falling off and he was still alive.
Oh, God.
They carted him over to the hospital. When they got there, the guy was almost a skeleton, but he was still alive and then he died. You can't get any worse than that.
No. Jeez.
It's a 1946 case.
Oh, my God.
March.
That's not the Virginia case, is it?
No. The Virginia case was a UFO crash, recovery of entities.
Right.
Happened in 1996. That's another, thing altogether, which I believe that there have been recoveries of anomalous craft and entities.
Yeah, it stands to reason. There's been some widespread sort of reports, if you will, about either obviously crash UFOs, and that's a whole other genre, if you will. You know,
it is.
Crash UFOs, alleged crash retrieval teams, cases like the Virginia case, a lot of weird stuff. This whole thing is flummoxing. The more I even look at the humanoid stories, and I presume. You also sort of include, there's also like this element to it, we've kind of focused on the UFO aspect of it, but there's also this sort of folkloric element of it, elementals and gnomes, as I teased before, and elves and fairies and that kind of stuff. Have you looked at those cases, and I mean, what do you make of that whole thing? What do you make of that whole thing?
I include all those cases also. I think they're entities, they're anomalous entities or humanoids. Maybe in the Middle Ages, when people encounter little men, they were called, like Jack Ballet said, they were called fairies or elves back then.
Right.
And the funny thing is that nowadays we still have reports of encounters with elves and fairies, even leprechauns.
Interesting.
I have loads of cases like leprechaun type entities in my files.
Strange.
It was O'Brien. He wrote the cases over there in Colorado. He, in his book Enter the Valley, he includes a case of a hunter, a bear hunter, I believe, in Colorado on the New Mexico border. He encountered something in the woods that looked just like a leprechaun. Saw a little man dressed in green with a green hat. And this is in New Mexico.
Yeah. yeah. Weird. See, that's the cool part in a lot of ways, too, because this is so, once you start going down one train of thought, you start going off on all these sort of, like I said, outliers and things where you're like, no, not necessarily, not necessarily. It's kind of very bewildering because at first you think, well, maybe just like you said, maybe, and Valet said, maybe maybe the tales of elves and gnomes were really the aliens, and it was all, or, you know, for lack of a better term, on aliens, you know, all this one same thing. But then you get stories where, like this guy you're talking about, who clearly saw, you know, something along the lines of a diminutive human, if you will, not an alien, I guess is the
right.
So we're back to these being different things again. It's very confusing.
Very, I know. I mean, I wish it's really hard to. I think it's really hard to find an answer to this. I'm not here to find. I'm not doing this to find an answer. I'm just doing it to have a record of all these incidents and encounters.
Right.
I want to have a record. A chronicle, if you will, of all these incidents. I'm not here to find an answer. Really, I don't think I'll be able to find an answer. Maybe there's an answer in among all those cases in there somewhere, combined with something with something. Who knows? But I find it difficult.
Well, Greg and I were talking about this, and I've talked about it with other guests too. And hopefully someday in the not too distant future, the right people can come together for a project like this. But I'd love to see somebody take that database of stuff that you have and synthesize it statistically and see if we can come up with anything in there that we haven't figured out or noticed yet. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like all of a sudden we realize that if you're in Brazil on the 4th of November and it's a full moon, it's going to happen or something like that.
Yeah, true.
So I'd like to see a project like that undertaken someday. Maybe I can
see it. It will be great.
Yeah.
It will be great.
Yeah, because that might be the only, like you said, maybe the answer's in there, but
somewhere.
Don't know how to figure out what question to ask yet. Might be the best way to put it, you know. Do you foresee, right. What I like about you two, Albert, is, you got your head down, you're just doing the work, which I have a lot of respect for. Do you foresee, within the UFO community, of course, though, there is this sort of this push for us to be told the answer. Do you foresee any sort of future where we do, or is it just always going to be a mystery to us, you think?
I don't know. It's going to be a mystery. I think it's going to be a mystery for a while. I think, like you said, if once we go to another plane, I have a feeling we'll find the answer. But, while we're still here in this world, I think it's going to be a mystery for a while. I don't know. Unless something really happens, something that, like earth shattering, I don't see anything that's going to tell us what's the answer coming up anytime soon. I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know. A lot of people think there's going to be government revelation coming out soon, and we're going to be told. I don't know. I wish it would be true. So.
Yeah, but just looking at your stuff is like an argument against that, in a sense, just because the sheer amount of weirdness going on, I can't imagine that the government could have figured it out themselves. So, and whatever answers they have might have come from one of these entities, and I don't know if I would trust it in the first place, so who knows.
Maybe they gave up already, and didn't really...
I could see that, yeah. The government saying, hey, this is way too complicated and weird for us, and it's not hurting us, so let's just move on.
Yeah. I was looking at a case here, and which I always thought it was, a lot of people ask me, what is a case that you find important, interesting? There's this case in 1993 from Israel.
Uh-huh.
A place called Borgata, May 30, that this lady, Hannah, she woke up. She heard a dog barking. She got up. This is around 3 a.m. in the morning and went downstairs from her bedroom to the kitchen and looked out the garden through the glass door. When she saw her dog literally flying through the air and slamming against the wall.
Oh, God.
Poor dog. Shocked and terrified, she bravely opened the door and was confronted by an invisible wall. She couldn't move. She couldn't go any further. Then she saw like an 8-foot-tall giant, a man in bright coveralls. Her first thought, for some reason, was a thief, she thought. Suddenly, she heard something inside her head that told her, you think I'm a thief? "What did you do with my dog?" she asked furiously. And then she heard again in her head, "He disturbed me as you do now." The giant spoke to her telepathically without moving his lips. And this is what he said next. "I could crush you, but I don't want to. Just leave me alone. I'm busy." The woman then ran back into the bedroom to wake up her husband. When both came down, the giant had disappeared. In the garden, they found huge footprints, about 1 foot and 4 inches in length. And certain, they later found circles in their garden and some kind of powder on the floor. But I just thought it was kind of frightening the way this entity told a lady that he could crush her.
Yeah, yeah. I'm rendered speechless here. Yeah, that's, he just dismisses, she's like an insect. He just dismisses her like, I would, you know. I could fling you across the wall like the dog. Did the dog die, or was it what happened with the dog?
Doesn't mention anymore what happened to the dog. Hopefully not. Well, he was slammed against the wall, but it reminds me of the movie Prometheus, the tall giant type of creature. Did you see the movie?
No, I didn't see it.
No. Okay. All right. Well, never mind then. But I thought this is a kind of a strange, ominous case. I mean, I don't like to dwell in the negative cases, but there's, you know, they should be paying attention to, I believe, you know.
What about an instance where, you've heard of these kind of stories where it's like they're often tagged with an angel situation where people are saved by an entity, a mysterious entity. Have you ever looked at that kind of thing? Have you ever gotten any? I'm sure you have. I feel like every question I ask, have you gotten these? And you're like, yes, I have a million of them. Have you talk a little bit about those potential stories? Because I'm sure they've crossed your path.
There are many cases, in which people claim that they've been beneficially affected after encountering, not necessarily a humanoid, but after encountering a UFO. I remember the case in Texas, the two police officers, one of them had been recently bitten by I believe it was an alligator, and he had a wound. And they came upon a UFO that emitted some light towards them or something, and the next day this guy was cured of the wound. And there's also cases of people claimed, I talked to a guy personally from Brooklyn, New York, and he said he was cured of his cancer after an encounter with he woke up and there was, like, according to him, there was 4 men in the room. They were all blonde, wearing blue outfits, tight fit, and blonde hair, and they came up to him. They did something to his stomach. And he was cured of his cancer. He had some kind of cancer. I don't remember what, pancreatic, which is very lethal. Hmm. I talked to him back in the 90s. This is according to him, it happened in 89. That's his story. I can't say it's true or not, but there's many cases in which people claim very positive, you know, after effects.
Yeah.
So it's not all doom and gloom.
Right, right. It's not all that they have these encounters and they die, or they get sick or anything. It's so weird.
Or get threatened, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, yeah, I'm sure you sort of looked at the Men in Black aspect of all this, too, because that's one where people don't know if they're humans or aliens or what. They're kind of like the Black Eyed Kids situation.
Yeah, a lot of people connect to both, but I don't know if there's a connection. I find the Black Eyed Kids more sinister than the Men in Black, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the Men in Black has been reported, in the U.S., U.K., and South America, Australia, many countries, France. Funny thing, in Russia and Eastern Europe, very few cases of actual Men in Black type reports. Maybe one or two that I know.
Interesting.
Not that many at all.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
You've sort of drawn this delineation between Eastern Europe and United States twice now with the Men in Black thing and the Greys. So I guess why do you think there's this difference between what's being seen and reported between those two regions of the world?
I don't know if it's a cultural thing or not, but in like I was saying, gray type creatures or humanoids, very rare. And in Russia or Eastern Europe in the 70s or 80s or 90s began to have some types of gray type creatures. Late 90s, Hungary, Poland, Russia. I don't know why. I don't know what, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe they had different type of, visitors back in the 90s or in the 80s. They were mostly human type, tall or giant or robotic, different types. Maybe, you know, they moved on. In the U.S., originally, if you look at the catalog of entities in Ballet's book, Passport to Magonia, there are no reports of grays there at all in the 50s or 60s in the U.S., or even the early 70s, not until, you know, Travis Walton incident.
Yeah.
75. A lot of the cases of gray encounters in the 50s and 60s were from people that remember those later on under hypnotic, you know, regression, you know, and then mostly in the 80s or 90s, I remember, yes, I was abducted back in 59 by gray, you know, by the grays. I don't know. Food for thought, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's, well, you wonder where, how that all happened, how they decided to come here. Maybe they got permission or things changed. You wonder, like, what changed here to, if something changed here to allow that kind of encounter. Who knows?
Well, I gotta believe that the dawn of the nuclear age had something to do with it. I think, not, you know, big into, you know, the politics of all that, but I think, detonating atomic bombs in the upper atmosphere and the underground, I think that has to do something. Somebody has to notice that or some from somewhere. Somebody or something. It has to affect somebody. If we were talking about other dimensions, maybe there's some kind of a dimensional rift that are happening. Who knows?
Right. It could have like a negative effect on their ecosystem. So.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And then they come here to be like, hey, stop it, dude. Stop doing this stuff because it's hurting other people. And maybe, you know, eventually they'll lash out at us if we keep messing with their, you know, environment, their environment.
Well, I don't think we have tested any nuclear weapons for a while. Not, at least not in the U.S. and, or, you know, I don't know about other countries. I think the last country that tested it. A nuclear weapon was either India or Pakistan, one of them.
Yeah, it would stand to reason one of these countries that are developing nuclear weapons would be,
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's the difficult part too, in a way, because let's say Iran is developing, we're under the impression Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. And if we, right. From what we know about the history of all this, it would stand to reason then that there would be an uptick of UFO activity, in and around
Iran.
There. But countries like that and North Korea, we're never going to find out what kind of UFO events are happening there. So it's difficult.
North Korea has nil information about UFOs. There's a lot of, believe it or not, there's a lot of information on UFOs in Iran.
Hmm. Yeah,
there has been a lot of incidents. Not so far as humanoids, but a lot of incidents of encounters in Iran. Humanoids in Iran, there were several reports in the 70s.
Now, what about the djinn? Have you looked at the djinn at all? Because that is a humanoid type entity that pops up now and again.
Well, yeah. The, according to Muslim lore, the djinn is some kind of is one of the creatures supposedly created by God that I don't know. It was like an angel, but not good enough. So it was it was banished to another dimension or another region. And according to lore, they've been trying to get over to our, you know, our plane of existence here and take over. And they always hated human, the djinn.
Yeah.
They've been trying to take over. But, that's another type of humanoid, you know, to, for sure. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of, there's the whole website, I mean, with like the jinn encounters in a lot of the Muslim countries.
Yeah,
I really haven't encountered, I really haven't included too many of those. Maybe a few, but not too many.
Okay, yeah, yeah. There's a whole sinister element to the jinn that's even adds another layer of creepiness to it, you know.
There are different types of jinns, yeah.
Yeah, as far as I can recall, I think they're the only entity, except for, I suppose, demons, which might be the same thing, that are just pretty much known to hate humans, so, you know.
Right, right.
You don't get that with, like, Bigfoot or even the aliens.
No.
But with the jinn, it seems pretty clear-cut that they're not big fans of humans, so.
No, don't like us too much.
Now, what about robots? You also have robots in the mix here of this whole thing, and I'm good buddies with Bruce Rux, and he's a huge proponent of the ETs as robots theory. So talk a little bit about some of these cases you've had where people report encountering robots.
Most of the robot encounters that I have are like robot-type entities accompanied by other entities, more human-type entities or even grays. And the robot seems to be like some kind of some kind of security or some kind of guard or some kind of helper with the flesh and bone entities, so to speak. There's been reports of robot-like type entities themselves, some kind of a creature. Or some kind of humanoid coming out of a UFO that looks just like a robot, type of metallic. And there's been cases in which contactees or even abductees have been told that Nordics, that they've been told that some of the greys are actual robotic or androids made by them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There could be a possibility. Yes, so many. It's like a big gumbo, if you ask me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like you say here, you have, entities, beings, little men, giants, MIB, creatures, amphibians, reptilians, greys, etc. We're dealing with the whole menagerie of creatures. Now, you do have an article on the site about aquatic encounters. Talk a little bit about that. What's going on there?
For ages, we have encountered aquatic entities, mermaids. I mean, even in modern times, we have mermaid encounters. In Israel, in 2009, off the coast of Israel, there were several encounters with a mermaid, a woman-type creature. In Zimbabwe, in Peru, in a lake, a mermaid, this is, I'm talking about 2010, mermaid-type encounters. And besides mermaids, other aquatic entities in the Crimea and the Ukraine, there's an area there that they've seen huge entities swimming underwater that appear to be with scales, but they're human-like. But they don't look like the mermaid, you know, like a regular mermaid. So there's some other type of underwater creature. But ever since there's been throughout the ages encounters with besides the your sea serpent, there's type mermaids and other aquatic humanoids.
Now, what happens? What happens when these people see the mermaids? Are there any interaction between the people and the creatures?
There have been reports of interaction. Yeah, that actually, either the creature or the mermaid jumps on board the vessel or comes ashore, and there's been reports of a mermaid here and there being captured, mostly in the early Middle Ages.
Well, what do they do when they jump on board the ship, or what happens in the interaction? I mean, do they talk to the people? What do they say? Give me a little bit about that.
But what I remember of the cases of board the vessel, the ones that there was one that was captured and then sent, thrown back into the water, but there's another one that jumped on board, but there was no verbal communication of any sort. Not too much communication that I can recall in the mermaid type cases.
Interesting. Okay. Now, beyond the warnings of, we talked about sort of the warnings that they've communicated at times, not the mermaids, but just entities in general, and also sort of instances where they say, you know, do you remember me? Are there any other communications that we know of? Obviously the ongoing type contactee stuff, but anything else, any sort of messages you think that particularly resonate with you that you've heard from these encounters that might be worth talking about?
Another theme that seems to be very common, and people are told that that they will know in the future why they have been contacted, that they're being prepared for something. You're not ready. They're not ready yet, but in the future you will know why this happened or why you were contacted or why you were doing this to you. And you will know in the future. They're supposed to know something, and when it happens, why? And they're supposed to do something. You're being prepared for something, and when that happens, you will know what to do. That's another message being told to, you know, different people.
That's bizarre.
I found it bizarre too, because I thought it was only one instance, but then I started getting different instances of people being told that.
And this is, when do these sort of things happen? Like, more recently, or are we talking throughout the course of, you know, the last 100 years or whatever?
Throughout the course, maybe starting in the '80s.
Weird.
Eighties, when the missing time came of age.
Yeah. So we've almost got like, see, cause yeah, partly why I ask that is cause like maybe, if it was something that was happening in the '40s and the '50s, you think the window is closed for whatever was supposed to happen for these people. But if it was happening in the '80s and the '90s and stuff, then that we could be, like you said earlier, we could be approaching something that we don't know about yet.
Well, in the '50s, if there were cases like that, like I said earlier, there were discarded or ignored by whoever was investigating.
Yeah.
Or the only cases that we heard of that were any contact were the contactees. With, you know, most of them, you know, you can't really say that, you know, maybe some of them had an encounter, but then they made the rest of the stuff up, you know, who knows.
Exactly, yeah. Now, yeah. Well, I hope it's unfortunate. I'm sure there's people that do make this stuff up. Well, that's, you know, that's a disappointment.
I mean, I want to chronicle. I want to document every instant possible that I get a hold of. You know, I read that I'm told about, or I read.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's going to be cases there that are bogus. And I'm not a fool. I know. I don't believe everything I read either. You know. I just want to get everything down recorded. I feel like it's important.
Well, one aspect of this whole paranormal phenomena that I've talked about on the show before and with different types of guests, is just the idea that maybe this stuff's just generated from the mind. That maybe these are like tulpa type effects, even if it's subliminal. You know, somebody has an encounter or somebody sees, more likely maybe in these serendipitous type events, maybe just somebody sees something anomalous, but really it's a projection of the mind. I mean, what do you think of that whole line of thought?
Yeah, there's been cases when somebody is like, maybe they go into a trance and they see all kinds of, scenery or scenes or entities. And they think they've been different places, and they've been in a room the whole time. Somebody staring at them or sitting next to them and knowing that they haven't gone anywhere. And maybe they projected their mind somewhere else or something. I call those cases, psychic cases, in a different category completely.
Right, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. So you're saying, yeah, like, you're saying more that the effect is imposed on them, perhaps, than it's something that they've created.
Well, maybe it's some kind of projection from the mind or something. Or, I don't know, is this triggered by something? You know, I read of cases of people that had some kind of seizure, temporal lobe, and they seen stuff.
Oh, God.
You know, temporal lobe seizure. And, of course, people that experienced DMT, that is some kind of hallucinogenic, and they see entities also.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's another thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, you're trying to sort through a whole bunch of different stuff all at once. It's remarkable the work that you do. Beyond continuing this mission of chronicling all these things, what's next for you? What do you have, what do you have planned on the horizon? Have you ever considered, I guess the gist of that question really is, have you ever considered putting together some kind of book that will really...
Yeah, I have. I guess I haven't been able to get the right connection yet. I want to do that. I want to do maybe several volumes.
Oh yeah, you'd have to with all this stuff.
Yeah, well, definitely. I had a couple of issues with people copying all my information and trying to publish something in Amazon under their name. And then I had it's incredible. They just copied and pasted everything and just put it in a Kindle format and
yeah.
Book. Amazon tried to publish it. Of course, I had to fight Amazon, and I say this person stole everything I had in my webpage without my permission. So it's been some problems like that.
That's ridiculous.
They try to say that they themselves compiled everything and incredible. I don't know how people can do that, man. Right?
Yeah, that's just pathetic. That's just like a really, scummy thing to do. I don't know.
Yeah.
Shame on those people is what I say. So I highly recommend you put together a book on this stuff. But like I said, I mean, I went to one year on here and it was like 250 pages of a PDF file. And it was, so just the sheer amount of stuff is amazing.
I try to make each entry as long as possible with all the important information in there. You know, I try to stay away from short entries, but there are many of those. But I try to make the entry as informative as possible, to make it interesting, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's just you could get lost for days in this website. So, like I said, I can't commend you enough, Albert. You're doing some tremendous work.
Thank you.
I always know a good researcher because after I'm done talking to them, I have more questions than I had answers, going into this about the subject. I mean, if you know what I mean, a renewed curiosity. And I definitely feel that from talking to you. I'm even more confused about the phenomenon than I was prior to all this.
Me too.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah, it's a tremendous amount of work, and I gotta put you over here too, Albert, cause you've done some just tremendous stuff, and you're so humble about it. I really am amazed. Anybody else in this field who has done the amount of work that you have compiling this stuff would be patting themselves on the back so much they have an injured shoulder. That's how it is in this field, so.
No, you know what? I enjoy it. I do. Sometimes I do. Get a little fed up and frustrated and confused, especially when something like that happened, what I mentioned earlier. But I feel like I have to continue doing it, and I enjoy typing all that. I type and I compile and I translate. I try to do all I can to get all the information down.
Yeah, I mean, your humility is breathtaking, man. I mean, you're doing amazing stuff, and I'm glad that Greg turned me on to your material and that we've had the opportunity to have you here on this show, and you've been on Radio Mysterioso, and I'm sure you'll be back on my show and Greg's show, and hopefully on some other shows too, because more people need to know about this work that you're doing, because it's tremendous. And it'll give them a whole another look at this phenomenon in a lot of ways. So I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We'll definitely get you back on the show to talk more about this, maybe when I have it. A long stretch of time when I can really dig further into this. I'll try and do that idea of putting together the top
cases. Try to read some of the cases and see if you find any interesting cases that you want to discuss, and we could do that.
Yeah, we'll do that sometime in the future. Yeah. We'll do sort of a best of. But on that note, thank you very much for coming on the show, Albert. It's been a real pleasure, my friend.
All right, same here.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 8. Big, big thanks to Albert Rosales for coming on the show and for giving us so much time. be sure to check out his website, ufoinfo.com/humanoid. Pretty simple, ufoinfo.com/humanoid. There you can dig into the 17,000 plus case files on humanoid encounters that he has compiled. So carve out a little bit of time to dig into this website. It is like a rabbit hole, my friends. Once you go down into the humanoid encounter case file database that he has created, you're going to be in there for quite some time because it is tremendous stuff. Kudos to him for his tireless work. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA audio listener feedback, but if you're a long-time listener of the program, you can almost certainly guess what I'm about to say right now, and that is that we are going to eschew listener feedback here this week because this episode is long, long, long overdue. I don't even know what happened. Actually, I do know what happened. The last time you heard from me, we were doing the live edition of BOA Audio with the boys from Project Archivist, Lobo, and Rogan. And as you may recall, I was sick as a dog. Thankfully, we managed to wrap up that live program without any incidents during the show. But it took me about 5 or 6 days to truly recover from that illness. And then next thing you know, I was barreling headlong into a week of scheduled taped episodes. And as is always the case when we do the taped episodes, they require quite a bit of time on my end because I want to dive into the materials of the guests. So here I was, I had my head down, I was doing these taped episodes. I think we taped 4 new editions of BOA Audio in the last couple of weeks. And then I looked up and I said, oh my goodness, it's been way too long since we posted this program. Thankfully, I'm sitting on a pretty clear schedule for a change, and I could take the time this past weekend and today to wrap up the Albert Rosales edition of the show, which you have just listened to. I'm also sitting on the BOA Audio Baseball Special, which is historically overdue at this point. I'm going to buckle down tomorrow and hopefully have the rest of the segments for that program edited and, barring any unforeseen developments, have that special edition of the program available for folks on Thursday. Because the less time I spend on that, the better, as the vast majority of BOA Audio listeners do not tune into the baseball special. Beyond that, the plan right now is to contact a couple of friends and see about doing another live edition of the program very, very shortly. Hopefully, perhaps Sunday. Best case scenario would be Thursday, but I'm highly skeptical of that. But Sunday or the following week, we'll do another live episode. We got a backlog at this point, which is great. We got a backlog of taped shows that are really, really good. I was very, very happy with these taped shows that we recorded in the last couple of weeks. So for the folks who have been itching to hear BOA Audio, don't worry. I wasn't just resting on my laurels. I wasn't sitting here with my feet up saying, oh, they can wait. I was really buckling down and recording some fantastic future editions of the program, which you're going to start hearing very, very shortly. That's pretty much it. That's basically what's been going on. Sick and then overwhelmed with taped programs and then the annual WrestleMania existential crisis coupled with the BOA Audio Baseball Special keeping me busy, busy, busy. But it is smooth sailing now and I feel the wind picking up in my sails, and I cannot wait to start unleashing these conversations on you folks and getting back behind the seat for some live editions of the program. With that said, let me give you the means to contact me if you'd like to reach out and be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback. First of all, you can write to Benal at benalofamerica.com. Pretty simple, B-I-N-N-A-L-L at benallofamerica.com. Or you can just head on over to the website and click the contact button. If you want something a little more interactive, you can also join up at the official BOA forum, the US of E.com, theusofe.com. We like to call it BOA's Paranormal Playground. Lots of discussion going on there regarding the world of the esoteric, as well as pop culture and sports. So join up at the US of E for some off-kilter examination of our very weird world. Additionally, I'm on Facebook and Twitter, so just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. That'll bring up my respective profiles on those social network sites. I would be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. And, of course, I've got a plug, Binall of America on Facebook. You can find that simply by punching in Binall of America in the search function on Facebook or by clicking the little Facebook icon at BOA. The BOA Facebook page is where I post the latest in-house news from Binall of America and where I respond to various BOA audio listener feedback inquiries. So head on over there if you want to join in on the virtual fun happening at BOA on Facebook. No matter how you choose to reach out to me, trust me, my friends, I read all correspondences from BOA audio listeners and try to write people back as soon as possible. If I haven't got back to you yet, folks, sit tight. I will reach out to you in response to your correspondence. And I want to hear your thoughts on the program, the season, guests you want to hear in the future, previous guests you really enjoyed and want to hear back on the show, all that good stuff. Send me your thoughts on the program. BOA Audio is truly an interactive show, and it is fueled, as we say at the end of the show, every episode by the BOA Audio listeners. Up next, please allow me to take a moment and thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V., Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our webmaster Ray Weigel, and our graphics guru Jeremy Boston. We have got a new piece up at Binall of America just posted in the last 24 to 48 hours from the esteemed Regan Lee, so be sure to check that out at BOA. And I want to make another renewed call for fresh voices to feature at Binall of America. If you have something to say about the esoteric, good, bad, or ugly, let me know. I'd love to bring you into the fold at BOA and give you a platform to spread your writing. You know how to get hold of me. I already pushed the contact methods. So if you're thinking about writing about the paranormal, please keep us in mind and let us know if you'd be interested in joining the BOA staff. Traditionally, now would come the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around and ask for donations from the BOA audio listeners. But since it has been 3 weeks since you heard from me last, I really don't feel quite comfortable asking for donations. So we'll do the right thing here. Help somebody else out if you want to this week. That would be great because, as I said, it's been a while since you heard from me. I'll push you for donations on the next edition of the program, but I don't want to be disingenuous here and ask for donations after you haven't heard from me in quite some time. On the next edition of BOA Audio, aside from the 2014 BOA Audio Baseball Special, I cannot tell you specifically what you'll be hearing next. I'd like to schedule another live edition of the program and probably will be contacting some folks tomorrow to see about doing that. As I said, best case scenario is Thursday, but it is highly unlikely. More likely, a special Easter Sunday edition of BOA Live with hopefully a real barn burner of a guest. I've got somebody in mind that I'd like to bring back onto the show. So hopefully, if he's free on Sunday, I think we're going to see if we can do that, and it would be killer. Beyond that, I'm going to start diving into these taped programs that I recorded over the last few weeks and start putting those together and getting those ready to unleash. As always, stay tuned to Banal of America and BOA on Facebook for all the latest news on the next edition of BOA Audio. Hopefully, all of the interminable delays that have really dragged us down here at the beginning of 2014 are in the rear view mirror, and we can get back to some semblance of a normal schedule. It drives me as crazy as it drives all of you folks. Trust me, it drives me nuts when we go so long without doing a show. So hopefully we can get things back on track here as we roll into the latter third of BOA Audio Season 8. Unbelievable. This is episode 19 of Season 8, and traditionally we only go 33 episodes per season. So we're well past the halfway point. We are closing in on the end of Season 8 already. It's been an amazingly fast journey this year, especially when you consider the delays that have plagued us in January and March. So stay tuned. That's really all I have to say about that. Stay tuned, because we got a lot of great stuff coming at you in the next few weeks and months as we head toward the close of Season 8. And with that said, we close the book on this edition of the program. Thank you once again to Albert Rosales for coming on the show. And of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the ones who stick around to the very end of the show, the folks who email me and post on Facebook asking when the next edition is going to be coming out. You guys are awesome. You are, as I've always said, the fuel that drives the BOA mothership. Thank you for your enduring support of this program, and thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.